Welcome to the D-Web podcast. We have Rob here and Yachen. Please introduce yourself.
I'll go second. Yachen, you go ahead.
Okay. Well, what do I say about myself? I'm Yachen, or Diletta in the Gitter channel, if you ever stumble on me. I'm big on helping people. I like helping. It makes me happy. So if you have questions and you see my name, don't, you know, feel free to tap me on the shoulder or DM me or whatever it is. Call me out and ask me. I've been working with Gitter, with Gun in random projects for probably over a year now. I tried helping Mark with some rad code. If anything, I just made him debug more, which is good. And I'm working on a kind of secret project still that will hopefully make programming easier for the world. So it'll be fun. That's me.
You've single-handedly saved my butt about a million times now in the chat room because I'm gone off doing stuff. And you also have kids. I have kids as well. And so we kind of have rotating shifts, it seems, between you're at work or the kids are in the middle of the night. And thank you so much. You've been one of the biggest people in the community, setting a role model for everybody else to help out and be kind to others. It really makes a big difference in the community and sets Gun apart from other communities out there. So thank you.
Yeah, anything I can do to free you up to do more coding and make the program better. So,
all right, Rob, today we're going to be talking about your...
My stuff?
Yep.
Yeah, well, I just want to jump in and say I agree. I've found Yachin's input to be really helpful. And so thank you for being here, being a part and contributing, because, it's... You know, more people helping is helping to grow this community. So it's a great contribution.
Quick note on that. As the catch up for this last week compared to the week before, is a bunch of the people in the community got together and decided that we are going to officially go ahead with doing the team formation, and Kale set up a Discord channel so that way we can do 24/7 audio rooms for anybody who wants to be part of one of these three teams. You can get into the Discord, jump into the audio chat, and help pair program with people, learn stuff, help others, and build and ship stuff. So that way, not only is the community better, but the tooling for the community is improving and growing and being maintained by the community, not just me, which is very, 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 very helpful for others to be involved in actual important projects and pieces and components. And today, Rob is going to be showing off one of those.
All right. Well, what should I start with, though? I guess, so the project name appears to be settling on WEAR. So for people who maybe don't know what this word means, it's equivalent to a dam, as in a waterway, a dam in front of a waterway. So they're used in small streams and also on larger dams to control the flow of water. And I decided to start using analogies around things that contain water, because I wanted to use useful analogies within the code.
You should give us your hackathon story that you mentioned off call last week, but was a really great story. You should definitely repeat for this podcast.
Sure. All right. Well, I think the question originally was, you were asking me why it was that I wanted to build a framework, and I was kind of giving some backstory, and I had mentioned, well, I've actually written two frameworks before. So the first one was a server-side Node.js framework, because I was wanting to see a little more structure in a lot of the server-side projects that I was seeing. I was a little unhappy with how Express apps tend to be pretty freeform. And then I had done a framework after that I called Concise, which was sort of an experimental framework that had some interesting libraries that implemented data binding. One of the ideas I had that kind of inspired me to start experimenting was, what if you were to take any regular JavaScript object and then just recursively replace every property with a getter, setter pair? And then you could use that to make those properties observable, right? When something is set, you can then invoke the callback and have things watch it. And so that was reasonably successful, but I never evaluated the project for performance or anything like that. And then right around that time, React was already a thing, and I started to pick up React. And one of the things that React accomplished that I never really started working on or even, you know, recognizing as an issue is just that you need a virtual DOM in order to make large scale applications more performant. So I never did any of that stuff, and I ended up dropping that framework and just leaving it as an experimental thing. So now I'm on my third framework, and which is Weir. And the reason for writing this third one started from going to this hackathon. So I went to a hackathon, I wanted to work more with Gun, and I had been evaluating different CMS systems because I need to build a web page to share with a couple people on a project that I'm working on. I wasn't really happy with any of the systems that are out there. I looked at Sanity, Strapi, Graph CMS, some other ones too. These are all headless CMS systems. And it seemed that there was always this unfortunate trade-off that the open source options were really junk, and the ones that were not open source were amazing, but they weren't open source. And I didn't like having to make that decision between which one I want. Both, you know, I wanted open source and I wanted amazing. And then in that mix was also Gun. And I was thinking, this seems really interesting, but I don't know, I would need to play with this more. So I went to this hackathon. I was also looking to meet other programmers to try and recruit. And I saw it as an opportunity to just dive in, build something with Gun. I don't know if I'm doing it right, so maybe it will end up as just awful code towards the end, but at least I'm just going to try it out. So that's what I did, and I learned a whole bunch. One of the things I discovered partway through was that by using Gun in a React project, there was just no reason to include Redux or any of the async handler libraries like Redux Logic, which is a library I really like for all sorts of asynchronous stuff. It was just totally redundant, and I had this realization as I was trying to integrate the things that the data I was receiving through Gun, I was piping it through Redux Logic and then through Redux. And then I just realized this is so pointless. And by just changing a couple function calls, I completely circumvented Redux and everything worked great. So I then said, whoa, let me just uninstall these, and the application worked. And I thought, this is the way to do things. But what I was manually doing with each component is that I was using React's new hooks API to bind my data to my components. And I thought, wow, if I just had a library that kind of just loops over all of my properties of my data and assigns a listener automatically, I would have something very declarative. I would just say, like, these are the properties that I'm going to be receiving in my component. And then my component will just render, like, up, it'll redraw when those things change. And that was the inspiration for writing what is Weir at this point.
Nice. That has got to be so satisfying to be able to remove code and remove dependencies, yet still have things work. Now, I'm biased because Gun is helping with that. But I, even inside of my own code, when I get the day to delete code and things still work, oh, I'm such a happy person.
Yeah, so working on Weir has been extremely fun, and it's getting to the point now where it's at sort of a minimum level of usability. Last time we looked at one small, tiny little demo project I was putting together, which is a retro board.
Yeah. And
yeah, so I'm not ready yet to show the revamped, refurbished version of that. It's still needing attention because I'm working on this multi-dimensional data structure that I'm going to use to write it, and that's just not ready yet. But I do have an Electron app that is using Weir to bind data to components, and it's pretty slick. So I could demo that.
Yes, please do.
All right, let's try to share on this other computer that I've got here. Okay, well now we need to go to VS Code. Is it working? It looks like it's working. All right, and we'll get some syntax highlighting here in a second. There we go. So what are we seeing here? This is a modal. All right, so we've got mostly just one component and a second component for a modal.
Do me a favor and, if possible, demo the Electron app first, and then I'll be able to know which elements correspond to which code component.
Oh yeah, no doubt. That is the goal. So let's see here. I was just working on Rails. Let me just move back to my Electron project here.
A true polymath.
I'm just comparing your top bar with my top bar, and I see I have Docker and you have Docker, so that makes us friends right there.
Yeah.
You two are both way smarter than me. I can't figure out how to get Docker to work.
We have polymaths all around here.
I'm a wannabe polymath, but the reality is just JavaScript and really just ES5. I'm like a grandma when it comes to apps and projects.
All right, it works. Cool, because it wasn't working on my other computer and we don't yet know why. Okay, so there's not a whole lot to look at here. I was just adding some stuff onto the page kind of at random because I was demoing for my girlfriend and she humors me. And it's always sad when you're demoing for somebody who's not a programmer because it's like, look, isn't it amazing that I can add this button? And now... It's like the most simple things that are exciting because when you're implementing a framework, nothing really looks all that flashy. But so we can get the host name from the computer. We can get the current directory. And then there was this. I was wanting to implement a little more functionality that involved some local state and such. There's no built-in prompt in Electron. The normal like window.prompt doesn't work in Electron. So I had to write an actual React component for this.
Your modal stays in the center of the screen even when you adjust the screen size. Gasp.
I mean,
we live in the future, people.
React magic.
So, and then if I hit cancel, it behaves appropriately. It goes back to the original value. So, like, see if we hit cancel, it's going to reload from this. And so, because what's happening here, this is a div element, and then when we hit cancel, it's just going to display none. So all of this stuff is still actually there. You're just not seeing it. So if I go and change this, I have to have the logic in place to actually respond to this click button that we want to go back to the actual value that we have here.
Right.
And then if we hit accept, we want to change. And when we all this stuff. So this was a test of working with the framework, because these are the things that we learn, you know, as we start off with some ideas, nice ideas about, you know, how could a framework maybe work? But then once you actually build something with it, then you learn, oh, this was clunky, or this didn't work out the way I thought it would.
Story of my life.
So there's, we'll start off with the top here. Actually, let's start from, we've got a file in here called tank. All right, so it's kind of a Russian doll analogy. You include Weir. I'm naming the default include tank, which is like the idea that you have a weir. Once you fill it up, then you're able to fill a tank. Mm. And this really just is mostly calling the gun constructor. But these are actually properties that are used in weir framework. So if we wanted peers, for example, we would just put peers in here with your, you know, your HTTP, your whatever address here. But we don't have any, so we're not doing that here. So then once we've initialized, then we can use this. So we export this. And we need some buckets. So that is this one here. So we import, once we have a tank, then we can create a bucket. And a bucket needs a name. There is some, the framework doesn't allow you to just put just anything for these buckets. There's some rules that are in place, and it also uses this JavaScript symbols to ensure that these are globally unique. And then this is the structure, which if you're just passing a plain object like this, then WHERE is gonna use a default sort of generic data structure, and you need to play by the rules, which is that you need to have a state property and you need to have a methods property. So state, this is the actual data. These are the names of the pieces of data that we are going to be able to change and render. And then methods, this looks like this is not actually being used. We can just take that out. So this is sort of the, I think of this as the safe API. So whatever we expose here should not expose any of Gun's internal API, because the way I see this working for other developers is that they should be able to use a data structure and know that there's pretty good guarantees that they can't do a put with something that's gonna clobber their data. So
I think actually going back to an earlier philosophy of mine, that Gun is a protocol, and even it as a database library or project will hopefully fade into oblivion or invisibility over time. And ultimately, all application developers and programmers are working with these higher level turnkey, drag and drop, plug and play frameworks. And they know nothing about Gun underneath, the developer, but it's the framework that then makes it really easy for them to build this sort of stuff, whether they're aware of Gun or not.
Yeah, and it was when you said that that I really felt like, oh, okay, cool. I have permission to start, implementing an API that sort of hides the details of Gun. Instead of just grabbing a reference to a node and passing that to the developer, but actually look into ways like, how can we make this a little more just dumbed down to the point where it's like, developers say, I have a bucket, it has these things, these are the things I want my components to render, and that's kind of the whole story. So put here is just changing sort of the syntax of how we do a put in Gun. So normally you would have your node, you would say get name one dot put, and so I just decided to change this around to where the thing that you want to update is the first argument, and the value that you're changing it to is your second argument. And this needs to match what's over here in state. The other thing that WHERE is doing is by going through the steps where we first create a tank, and then we create buckets, and then we attach these buckets to our components, is that it's able to quote unquote rehydrate or hydrate, meaning that it runs the fetch request to preload that data so that ideally, if nothing goes wrong, and so far this has been working, that the data is already available by the time those components are mounting and ready to display. So one of the things that will probably need to be implemented later on is the ability to listen for that data if we're waiting on it to come in. So we would be able to say, hydrate is actually running right now. Like, we're expecting some data to come in, or at least that we've sent a request out and we haven't gotten back yet a request saying that this is all the data available. So, because if it's some data we've never seen before, maybe that would be a situation, but I'm not actually sure because I'm still not yet experienced enough with GUN.
So would this be a hook that you can hook into? Because that on could be just your event driver to call an update function, right? To rehydrate every time dot on gets fired for some part in your data structure.
I guess help me understand the question. If it's helpful, I can dive into the actual framework code to show you how this generic. Let me do that actually, because I'm not yet sure that I understand the question. But I think if I pull up this data structure, you'll start to see the actual references to GUN nodes inside of it. I'm just going through the whole node modules here till I get to where. I would fuzzy find this, but I haven't actually been able to get that working in VS Code when I'm trying to open something in node modules. It's kind of frustrating. So here we are, structures, and there's this generic, this file called generic, which is our generic data structure. So we have, this is a symbol that we receive, and node bucket, so my naming convention internally to the framework is that anything that starts with the word node is a GUN node, not a data node, but actually a reference to a GUN node. So this is our thing that we're attaching. And so here you can see rehydrate. This is going to get called during those steps when we initialize where, and then we create buckets. So in that process, rehydrate gets called early on enough that we send out the requests to receive that data. So here we have our first get. So node. So this is the bucket, and then what we're doing is we're looping over construct.state. So that refers back to this here. So we're now going to do a loop where each of these is a string that we receive. And that will come in as prop key. And then we have a value, which is these. But I think that there's something that's not working yet in as far as initializing the default value. I have some references here for it, but I think it's not working the way that I want it to. So we have once. We call once and we call on. And we set, once runs, and we set on state a corresponding value with the same property key. And the value, here you can see the reference to that default value, the one that we passed in. And we're also calling put. So I don't know if this is actually unnecessary or not.
I'm going to jump in really quickly here and comment on two things.
Sure.
First of all, node.on will also get called the first time. So when you set up a listener, you will also receive the initial state of the data as well as changes to it in the future. So you shouldn't have to call both once and on. But if there is some bug or something that you're working through and you had to do this for things to work, we should definitely discuss that to figure out why, what, and how. The second thing is, you don't know how many tests I've had to deal with where people might potentially save data into GUN inside a listener in GUN, which can become very trigger happy, because if you think about GUN's update cycle, that can easily get stuck into a infinite loop or something like that. But in the case of node.once, it should have already unsubscribed itself by the time you save the data, so it shouldn't impact anything. But I was curious, why are you saving? Is there a reason why you're resaving the data upon the initial read?
Yeah, so because the user has defined here basically that these are some default values. And so when we first run this, we should get an undefined, because once will run, if that data has never been there before, like that situation would be where this person has coded up this app for the very first time. They've never run it. Now they run it for the first time. They've got all their default values. We actually want to put that into Gun and into our hydrated state.
Okay.
That, that was the thinking there.
Well, in which case you might actually still need dot once, because dot on will be called with initial data, but it won't be called if there is no data. While dot once will get called regardless of whether there is no data or there is data, it will try and either return undefined if it cannot find anything, or the initial data as it currently is.
Yeah.
So that might need dot once to handle the edge case of this data cannot be found.
Yeah. So that's I think you're identifying the reason why I did this, because I couldn't remember actually why I have them both, and I think that I'd gone through some tests and I've seen, all right, well, on's not running for me, but once is, so I put them both in there. It also does the we had talked about off, and so this approach seems to work where I'm grabbing a reference to chain. I'm going to store this inside of a list relative to the prop key, and so this we need so that when the React component does an unmount, we can go back and call off so that all these listeners call themselves out. That appears to be working, but it's not heavily tested.
Sweet. And just quick note, that's not the chain in that context. That's the event listener itself.
Gotcha. All right.
Probably why it's working. Because it's the actual event listener versus.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you do chain.off, you might lose all data events.
Exactly.
Gotcha. All right. Well, fortunately that that's only in temporary variable here, the name for it, because then later on we just go through these. I think we've got vacate is the name of the method, and then for each we call off. There's also,
that's a good approach.
This is something else. I can't recall exactly what that is right now.
Well, I know local storage has dot clear on it.
Yeah, that's another thing. So I did kind of want to talk about what some of the features are, like the benefits of why you would want to use Weir rather than just using Gun by itself. A couple of things that Weir does, for one thing, is it will try to intelligently wipe out local storage and if it sees that you've made some structural change, like changing, let's say, if you have a data structure that previously had two dimensions and now it has three, or if you have moved, if you've renamed a bucket, that's going to mean that you're moving the data from one label to a completely different spot. So what it does is clears your local storage, forces a refresh in the browser, to hopefully bring you back to a state where you've got all brand new state to initialize. This, of course, only works when you're in development mode. This is not intended for, to be used once your application has launched. So that's one thing that it does.
It's actually very nice because, having a system that has no schema is very easy to rapidly prototype, but every single time you then change the schema that you're building up towards.
You've got the old one still sitting around, and you may start to get confused because names look the same, something like that. So it's supposed to help with that. Let's see what else. Let's start off here. So this is our first process. It gives you a default namespace, which it puts into local storage and uses that as a way to, go ahead.
Pause really quickly and go back to your app and show it as if we were, because you showed the demo and then you started showing the connection. And then we, I think for good reason, went into the data structure now. But let's return back to if I'm an Electron app developer and I'm using Weir, I don't know or care about Gun. Show us again kind of how I, as an application developer from a documentation standpoint, I think this one, right? Build my first Weir app, this, and then we'll dive back into the code behind it. Because I don't think we covered this screen yet.
Yeah, sure, no problem. All right, so the process is really nicely straightforward. A lot like getting started with a gun. You just initialize. So we got through the process of initializing a tank. We use that to create a bucket. This again is really simple because you just have, you declare some data that you want to use. It needs to have names, some default values. And then you have this, these methods here. Usually at the only thing that you're going to be using when you're using just a generic data structure like this is get state input.
So a couple questions on this. First of all, this seems like this file is what's used for an application developer to define their schema, their types, right?
Both the data as well as how you work with it.
Okay. And then second question, since I don't have really any React experience, is this methods? Is this very similar to kind of how React and React hooks are set up? That this is kind of, if you're a React developer, you're looking at this and you already know what's going on? Or do I need to be walked through what's happening here with the alert me set name one methods?
We're going to see how this ties in, but basically what happens is that everything with inside of methods, these keys, these are functions that you will be able to call inside of the component. And there's a whole other feature where we will be having, well, where we will have access to these, which is completely outside of components, but I haven't gotten to that. I haven't implemented that yet. But basically there's two situations that happen. So when you have a bucket, you want to be able to write these methods that, for example, let's say we had a counter. So we'd give ourselves a count. And then we would want to have an increment method. And you would just do, you just implement it like this.
No, okay, so get state here then is pulling back out from React.
It's actually pulling from the, back here inside of our code here, we have state right here.
Nice.
So that's the whole reason for hydrating. And one of the things that I was talking about in Gitter is like I want to have synchronous calls. And that's the reason why, is because oftentimes we need to have the data in memory. What will happen inside of a, like during a render loop, we want to be able to read that data directly and have it already available. So we want to trigger a redraw when something has, when we receive an event, but we don't want, well, when we are, when we're doing a re-render, we want to just be able to pull back in synchronously whatever data we already had. So that's the whole reasoning for hydrate and rehydrate. Cool. So this is how you would implement increments with a counter. And then there's an implementation for connecting this bucket to whatever component you want. And when you do that, increment is one of the things that that component receives, so you can call increment. So I'm going to show that.
Woohoo! live demo time.
Okay, sure, we can do that.
It sounds like a proxy. Is it a proxy underneath, or is it just React that makes that functionality happen?
What do you mean by proxy?
Like a proxy, you can basically define an object that has only certain, what do they call it, traps, like getters and setters, and then that's what's officially available to the person on the other side. I don't know if it's called a proxy now that I think about it. But basically you're defining an API that is usable in the context of the console, for example, or the context of your Electron. And then it only lets you access that object through those methods that you've defined. There's no other way to access the state other than through your getters and setters.
That's all accurate. And also too, I want to add that the other thing that this does, the reason for setting it up this way is also so that everything that all of this data, because all of it's real time, we're telling our application, these are the pieces of data that we are going to be listening for changes on, so that when these things change, a redraw just happens. We didn't need to do anything extra.
Yep.
Yeah. So
makes it atomic. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but this, I just want to call this out. So the way that this works right now is that we import a bucket. So this is the file I was in before right here, dashboard. So we import, I call it dashboard bucket. And then I'm saying dashboard bucket dot tap. So the idea was that you tap a bucket. This is going to change because this is terribly redundant. And you can see that there's total duplication here. Current directory here, current directory here. Well, the reasoning why it was done this way is because this is a way for us to, like, these are the names of everything that we're going to listen for. And we have to tell Weir what, if we didn't do this, we could, for example, have a bucket that has a lot of data here, a lot of properties. And then you would have a component that just updates on all of them, even if we're only listening to one. You don't want that. So that was the reason why this was initially done this way. I have a totally better approach now that is not going to create this redundancy. But this is what's working right now. So we still need to receive the actual arguments inside our function. So it may not, if you're not familiar with this way of doing things, this is our function signature, and we're just destructuring inside the arguments. So we have two things that we're receiving, and each of those have these properties. So bucket methods, these are all the methods that we saw in the other file. So everything here we expose underneath bucket methods. Because we called tap, they're now available. So we now have the ability, this component will redraw anytime that count changes, and we can receive count. So this is just kind of broken up into rows. So I'm just going to go ahead and add another row. And we'll give it a label. We're going to need an input. And we need a button.
I'll be curious to discuss more of the philosophy difference between, not right now, but maybe later, React versus Vue and stuff from people who actually have experience with these tools, unlike me.
Sure, yeah. Actually, React and Vue are very similar in a lot of ways. They're both Flux. There's a bigger difference between Angular and React. Because Angular tried to be more MVC. So that, I think, is all we need. Let me just verify that I've not made any critical mistakes. Looks correct. So we're just going to
see. Did you add the increment to the methods list?
Yeah.
I didn't see it. Scroll up. Show increment. After show prompt, don't you have to add increment?
I think what... Back on your app page.
Sorry, give me a second. My file's not saving changes. There we go. All right, say again.
So in app.js line 21, don't you have to add increment somewhere in that list?
You're correct. Thank you.
High five.
Okay. All right. Should already be showing up. Yeah, we didn't. We need to have get state here. So we just. And these are destructured. So we just receive one object here and we destructure inside the signature.
Oh my, look at that.
Cool, right?
Exciting.
So the idea is to make it so that you can, like, everything is really declarative. You just say, I have this data and these are the ways that I manipulate it. Now, one of the things that I kind of alluded to earlier but didn't explain, there's two things that happen. There's the methods that we want to actually use inside the components, but then there's also logic that sometimes is completely independent of components. So there's some data comes in, there's some important decisions that have to be made based on that. Like maybe we are granting or removing authorization from a user as they've logged in. Let's say you've got some sort of role-based access control or something. They log on and some permission has been removed from them. Well, there's no input from them. They're just supposed to now see something different than what they saw before. So we need to have some logic. Where does that go? Well, it has nothing to do with any of our components. And so that's a whole feature that I will be adding within the framework. So you'll be able to import buckets and you can just pass any number of buckets into this thing, which I think I'm thinking I will call it a pump. The analogy is that you have these different buckets and you can kind of connect them up to each other. A pump is, you know, in more of a purposeful moving of things. So in this sense, it's data. So we're sort of pumping data between buckets in a sense. So you would be able to connect these buckets up to each other, and then you have access to all these methods, and you can put logic in there, and this will be entirely outside of React's render loop.
Very interesting and very cool. Yeah, especially because it'd be neat if you could treat remote updates kind of the same way that you handle UI updates. Is that part of the idea?
Yes. So I can actually show you how, I wanted to highlight how this prompt works. This is a piece of our data here, which is we have a Boolean. And inside our component, we are, let's see, oh, it's in this other one here. So this is kind of good to bring up. So there's only two components inside of this thing. So we've got this one. I need my index file. So here in the index file, we've got two components inside the root. There's the app, and then there's this prompt modal. And both of these are bound to the same bucket. So when we go over and look at our prompt modal here, we see that it is again using that same bucket. It receives prompt visible. And right down here, it's just using this to change some CSS class, and that toggles whether or not it's visible or not.
Oi, so if this is a good point, I'd love to step the conversation back up from this demo of Weir. It sounds like you're also possibly going to make Weir agnostic to React or not. That could be dangerous. That could be a bad idea, or it could be a good idea. I'd love to hear kind of some of the philosophical differences, because I'm not in the JSX bandwagon, but JSX has obviously been tremendously successful. A lot of developers have hopped onto it, so it has a lot of merits to it, and I'm missing out on the bandwagon, right? And that's unfortunate on my side, because tooling like this that makes Gun and React very easy to use is really exciting and really powerful. But contrasted against, if you were to write plain HTML and embed these mustache tags inside of HTML, could you still use Weir through like an HTML-y route versus using Weir from like a JSX-y route?
Yeah, actually, so that's kind of the reasoning for making it totally agnostic to the front-end frameworks. So Angular, Vue, and React. So Vue and React are really, really similar because they both base all their ideas around the Flux architecture. And Facebook has a real good explainer on Flux architecture. I am a big fan of this because MVC is not a good design for front-end applications. As they start to grow and get larger, things become pretty messy because you're trying to add all these controllers and you have all these views, and you start to get a lot of overlap. All this is explained in their presentation, but there's a real fundamental shift. And Vue and React just go about implementing the Flux approach in their own ways. Vue is a little bit more like the handlebars templates that you mentioned. They actually use templates, and I think they have their own file extension, where at the top of the file you have the template, which looks very much like handlebars, and then below that you have your functionality. So it's all so much like with React, you get your user interaction, all the logic, the JavaScript that handles user interactions is very close to the presentation, the the markup, and the rendering of your data is all there. It's just a slightly different approach. So the other reason why I pretty early on decided that I was going to make Weir agnostic is because the amount of code in Weir that is actually specific to React is really minimal. So everything right now that is React only pretty soon is going to be taken entirely out, so that when you install Weir, you have to actually install React Weir to connect this, to connect Weir to React components. And that will give you all the same sort of, all the best practices and constraints of the framework that it provides. And then you can connect it to, if you have your own rendering, if you're really a happy user of handlebars, you're more than welcome to go and do that. You just will probably need, or you'll benefit from having something that responds to the updated events.
So now go over, in my head, it seemed like you had one page or one file that was handling the schema of the data that's in the app, as well as methods that update and process those. And then you have a separate file that's handling kind of the UI. To me, that does look very MVC. I might be using these phrases incorrectly. Consider me as a total noob on these subjects, because I do everything like vanilla jQuery-ish. It seemed very much like you're separating the methods that are updating and handling the logic of the data from the view of the data and their interaction. So maybe go over a little bit more. Is that MVC? Is that Flux? Is it not Flux? Is it not MVC? What are the advantages of having that separation versus them being combined together?
I'd say it's still a lot more Flux than it is MVC. The reasoning is that your methods, how you manipulate the data, is going to be specific to the data. But at the same time, you'll probably want that to be reusable, like in this situation where we are placing all this data into this bucket. And this, I'm thinking the way that this will continue to grow, particularly for this Electron app, is that I'm probably going to put all of my application state into this bucket, with the exception of anything that is really local that I don't need to keep. So I can actually show you an example of that. So here we have a pretty big chunk of React-specific code. This is all using React's Hooks API. So there's, I think, about three things that are happening here. We've got some state. So this is local state. This is a state that is only available inside this component and nowhere else. It also doesn't live on. It's not stored anywhere. So it doesn't live on, meaning between, like if you close the application and restart, it's not stored anywhere. So this gives us two things. That we have the state, the actual value itself, which is just an empty string at first. And then we have a function we call to update that string. And then we've got use callback. So what all of these functions that start with the word use, what these do is they just, every time it's called, it gives us basically the same object it gave us before. And the reason for that is because React, this is a function, and every time it redraws, we have a completely new scope. So the problem you have then is that any functions or variables inside here are going to be completely different from the last time the component rendered. So the new Hooks API is based around a caching technique. Every time you call use callback, it returns to you the exact same function you had the last time. And that way, we're not recreating that function every time the component re-renders. So we use The state thing, we use ref. Ref is a way for us to basically what it gets a little tricky inside of a inside of our callbacks. You'll see that we've got the references right here. So because this function only gets created once, when this runs the very first time, we get this state ref object. This function gets a reference to it. The next time this component runs, next time it renders, this would be a different thing. And so these functions, if we either have to recreate them over again, or we have to do some caching. So useRef gives us that cached object so that we can reference it. So all of this stuff here is for that modal, how I was showing you the accept and cancel logic. This is all React specific stuff. And the reason for putting prompt visible into our state is because then when we're in different parts of our application, imagine that this view, we could be on different pages, but we still want the same modal to pop up. By putting this piece of data into the bucket, it makes it very easy for us to change that data from anywhere in the application. Any view we're on, we can have many views, we can have this modal pop up, and it's always that same piece of data. So if you were to contrast that with not using a bucket, it might get a little more difficult. You would need to have an object of some type that is observable. And that's mainly what these buckets are doing in WEAR, is that they're giving us observable objects. The reason why you would want to use WEAR instead of just some type of an observable object, maybe you would go and get a library that gives you objects that are observable. You may recall that a while back there was a proposal to add observables as a native object within JavaScript, and that was later, I think, declined. I guess it's not going to happen.
Would have been better than promises.
But I mean, you can still make your own observables, like we talked about a little earlier. You can use getters and setters on JavaScript objects, so that definitely is an approach you could do. Anybody, for example, like you're talking about with a vanilla JS approach, you could definitely do that. The advantage, of course, with putting your data into GUN is if you do want to synchronize this across the network, there's no extra work needed. It's built in.
And that's going to update other Electron apps, like your mom or your grandma on the other side of the world, whenever you make an edit in WEAR from the UI, like pressing the increment button.
Yeah, if you wanted that, you can do that. In this case, I'm not going to be using it that way. I just still want to have the benefit of my API where I declare a bucket, I declare some methods on it, and then I can share those methods throughout all my components, and I can also connect those things together through those pumps that I was talking about that I will be adding. So I can just take any number of buckets and connect them up together.
Nice. So in this sense, you're not using GUN for any backend data store, database. It's just purely UI control and the data flow like water through the Electron app.
That's true. However, there is going to be a concept of a user account with their user's data, and we are going to have a website outside of this Electron app where we will be, again, it will look and feel like this. All the CSS and the React components that we use inside the Electron app, we will be using on our website. So there's going to be a cohesive branding across both of them. And any of that user's data that they put on the website, we can just pull into this Electron app. And so here you're starting maybe.
Yeah, do you want to back up and maybe explain what the greater vision and goal and why you're building this?
Okay, sure.
Stuff.
Well, I mean, I guess I can explain. So I have a startup, and we want to build this platform that is has IoT devices, and we want scientists to be able to work with these devices. We want to, you know, people like to be able to download something on their desktop and run it locally, and through Electron, we can execute commands through serial to the USB cable. But we also want this to all be a very connected experience. The idea is to help scientists collaborate. So we wanted to make it really easy for them to use anything that they've put into the cloud. And Gun makes it really easy for us to do that because, as you can see here, with just one API, I can manage my application state, and any pieces of data that I actually want to synchronize back up with the cloud, I can just do that by specifying different buckets, which are synced. Some buckets that do synchronize out to the network, and some buckets which are just purely local and ephemeral. They just get wiped out as soon as the application exits.
That's a really cool combination of two things and pretty powerful.
I love the productivity of this. I think this is, I compare it to, I've deployed our application a couple times, and before I was using a library called React Redux Firebase. So it's a long name, but it makes it really easy to connect your Redux applications to Firebase. And that was a tremendous boost in my productivity. But with Electron, with Weir and with Gun, this is going to be even better than that.
Nice. Cool. Well, maybe we should wrap it up on that ending note. Any last comments and thoughts and kind of what's the future direction?
Anybody watching this who is really comfortable with Vue or Angular, there's a bug in this stupid thing. This is it's all the fault of Webpack Dev Server. It's not my fault. only so much I can do. All right. Anybody who's familiar with Vue and Angular, if you'd like to come on Gitter and the piece of code right here. This is the React specific code within Weir. So you can see there's a component here called HOC. This stands for higher order component. And so we just initialize. We return it right here. This just does a quick little sort. It looks to see, do we want to use A or B as A or B, or do we want to flip there? You can, it's independent. But you get back a higher order component. So this is pretty much the bread and butter of our React specific code. It's, as you can see, it's not much. There is also this reducer that we use. This is the function that runs anytime data changes. And this is the code that we would port over to the Vue world, where things in Vue work very much like they work in React. And we could maybe, the problem here is that we're actually using some of the React Hooks API, which is right here. So there's probably some Vue-specific API we can use to accomplish the exact same thing. And then Angular, I have some notes on it, but I haven't started on it. But those are the things that will be coming up next, I think. And there was a bunch more topics we had that we wanted to talk about, but maybe we can bring them up next time. Like CMS, chat systems, we were talking about grant and trust. These are all things that I'd like to dive into.
Probably easily do a separate screencast on grant and trust as a kind of a coding session separate from a podcast. But yeah, next week, let's do a podcast on kind of what are good designs and architectures for chat applications, especially when you might have infinity scroll, and then plug into kind of the conversation we're having now about, well, then how can you build full-on content management systems based on these frameworks like Weir, and slowly layering things one by one until you have an end user experience that people can use. So not only do you have application developers and library developers, but then also users that are building on top of the tooling. Because that's a pretty incredible feat if there is somebody like me building the library, somebody like Rob that's created a framework, and then somebody, let's say like Yachin, that builds an Electron app on top of the framework, and then users that are actually using stuff. That's like four different categories, and having all those pieces come together from completely different worlds and working out is a pretty marvelous success story. So We'll have to dive into that more in next week's podcast. But elsewise, thanks so much, all of you, for coming on and explaining weir and some of the specific nuanced details of this layer. I think you were calling it tier two of data structures and the future that's ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thanks, Mark. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you so much for both of your time.
Have a great one.
Bye, everybody.